There we go. So as she said, I'm going to be talking about youth health literacy, which is a little different take on literacy. I do have to disclose that I am an employee of the Eugene M. Lang Foundation, which is who funds the development and creation of Building Wellness, which is a six-year youth health literacy program that is being piloted through the I Have a Dream Foundation. So as background, the I Have a Dream Foundation empowers children in low-income communities to achieve higher education and fulfill their leadership potential by providing them with guaranteed tuition support and equipping them with the skills, knowledge, and habits they need to gain entry to higher education and succeed in college and beyond. This is an after-school program where the majority of participants, who are called Dreamers, are from low-income minority populations. The I Have a Dream Foundation aims to give Dreamers skills to control their futures in academics and beyond. And in the same way, Eugene Lang, the founder of the I Have a Dream Foundation, realized that Dreamers need skills to empower them to be active participants in their healthcare as children and as they mature into adulthood. And while some Dreamers may be receiving health education during the school day, teaching them health literacy gives them the skills and self-efficacy to use their knowledge in an effective manner, thus the development of Building Wellness. The preliminary needs assessment drew from mixed quantitative and qualitative methods, including surveys, focus groups, and in-depth interviews. These tools asked about current health programming, the needs of Dreamers in the administrator's view, the needs and interests of Dreamers in their own opinion, and current health behaviors and skills of Dreamers and staff. And as you can see from this slide, it became apparent that health education and comprehension is lacking in the Dreamer population. While 76% of Dreamers have received some nutrition education, only 47% reported knowing how to cook a healthy meal. Nearly 50% of Dreamers are not familiar with the connection between diet and heart disease or type 2 diabetes. And Dreamers are also challenged by health skills and behaviors, as 1 in 4 Dreamers reported difficulty reading nutrition labels, and more than 1 in 3 Dreamers admitted to having problems understanding doctors. And this was a survey done before Building Wellness was developed. The advisory board and staff survey revealed that a youth health literacy curriculum had to address a range of topics, being careful not to repeat what Dreamers are possibly already learning in school. It had to include experiential activities so that Dreamers teach themselves while practicing new skills. It had to include all necessary background information in an easy-to-read manner so that the facilitator didn't have to go out and do extra research on the topics. It had to be very low budget, and it had to integrate exposure to actual health professionals. And so the resulting curriculum is Building Wellness. Building Wellness aims to encourage and empower children to seek, question, process, and integrate health information so as to obtain the highest standard of health. With family and community support, the program seeks to support Dreamers' self-efficacy and sense of well-being in conditioning their lives to extend their ambitions and fulfill their aspirations. The specific goals of the program are to decrease obesity and overweight, decrease hospitalization due to asthma, decrease rates of accidental injury, and to decrease alcohol and drug abuse. This slide is just a sample of the Dreamers' reactions to Building Wellness. We survey them after every year they go through the program, and as you can see, they do connect what they learn in Building Wellness with their lives. Building Wellness is a 6-year curriculum with 15 lessons and 5 extension lessons per year. It begins with Dreamers in 3rd grade and finishes in 8th grade. All lessons are based on literacy skills such as reading, writing, numeracy, critical thinking, listening, and verbal fluency. The following 2 slides show an example of the lessons and activities that are included in each curriculum. As you can see, we try to incorporate age-appropriate, real-life experiences, such as filling out a health questionnaire in Building Wellness 2. And the lesson topics mature as the Dreamers get older, and we begin to talk about things like healthy choices online. As you can see in Building Wellness 6, there's a lesson about proper and safe information to share online and actions to take in case of cyberbullying. Building Wellness also provides dreamers with an understanding of food labels and how their bodies work and change, tools against peer pressure, exercise tips, goal-setting skills, communication skills with medical professionals, and presentation skills. Facilitators are provided guidebooks that are written as scripts for easy and fast facilitation so that no health background is needed. They also participate in a short training session. Working with the Eye of a Dream Foundation provides a fairly consistent population that can provide longitudinal data. Most dreamers stay in the Eye of a Dream program from third grade all the way through high school, and we also have access to them when they're in college since Eye of a Dream is paying for part or all of their tuition. Additionally, due to the long-term nature of the program, a trust is built between the program, the dreamer, and the dreamer's family, which allows an honest sharing of medical and health information that may not be possible with other short-term after-school programs. Building Wellness is currently being piloted in 3 Eye of a Dream Foundation sites in New York City, where 2 sites have completed through the 4th year of the program, and 1 site has completed through the 5th year. And we also just rolled out our first national program in LA, where they have finished their first year. This slide shows the ethnic breakdown of the pilot sites, and as you can see, most of the dreamers are from minority populations, mainly Hispanic and African American. All participants qualify for free or reduced lunch, and 40% are at risk of becoming or are currently obese. So the evaluation of the program. This slide shows the planned schedule and methods of evaluation. Baseline data, including height, weight, age, asthma diagnosis, and blood pressure, is collected during lessons when a health professional is present. These measurements are taken again during the 3rd year and the final year, and we hope to collect measurements during their senior year of high school as well. A preliminary health questionnaire is conducted before Building Wellness begins to collect dreamers' thoughts on health and healthy choices. A more advanced version will be conducted at the end of the 6 years that will include questions based on the CDC's Youth Risk Behavior Survey. A pre- and post-evaluation is conducted for each year of Building Wellness that measures content-specific knowledge and skills. And beginning this year, the Realm Teen Assessment Tool will be used to measure health literacy during Building Wellness 1, 3, and 6. It's anticipated the participants will ultimately have a higher health literacy level than their peers who have not participated in Building Wellness. So the results of these evaluation methods. This slide shows results of the preliminary general health questionnaire that was given to third graders last year before they began Building Wellness. It shows a strong base of health knowledge, but identifies many opportunities for improvement. For the most part, dreamers correctly selected the healthy habits, such as eating vegetables, eating fruits, and drinking water. Dreamers generally had the right idea of what is healthy and what is not, though there was some confusion on what being overweight means and what causes someone to be overweight. Most dreamers reported that alcohol and drugs are bad. And of note is that most dreamers reported the reason for drugs being bad as side effects of smoking, such as damage to lungs, yellow skin, and wrinkles. So it seems that dreamers are equating drugs with cigarettes when they're in third grade. Pre- and post-evaluations continue to show knowledge increase, as seen on this graph. The graph is comparing raw scores of the pre- and post-evaluation for each year of Building Wellness. Dreamers are retaining information from each lesson and across years. Moreover, anecdotal stories from instructors show positive behavior change and an increase in curiosity about health and their bodies. Dreamers regularly check food labels on their snacks, wash their hands without prompting, and report asking their doctors questions during their appointments. Dreamers display self-efficacy and confidence in their ability to deal with health issues, as one dreamer came in and told us a story about his mother having gum pain, and she couldn't go to the doctor because she had to go to work for the rest of the week, and so he took her to the pharmacist where he had just been with his fellow dreamers for a Building Wellness lesson. So they went to the pharmacy, they spoke with the pharmacist, and she got a topical gel for her gum, which relieved the pain until she could finish her work week and then go to the dentist. And he came in so proud of himself that he had helped his family with this health crisis. So to address the families, a complementary piece was created called Building Wellness Family Style, which is a series of workshops for the families of participating Dreamers so that the lessons learned during Building Wellness can hopefully be implemented at home as well. During Building Wellness Family Style, Dreamers perform or present a lesson like these on the slide. Parents are given informative handouts, and then the Dreamers and family members create a healthy meal together under the guidance of the Building Wellness facilitator. They eat together while participating in a guided discussion about the topic of that specific workshop. This was a very preliminary project, but participants do appear to benefit. According to pre- and post-evaluation, all parent participants learned new ways to make healthy choices and expressed interest in coming to additional workshops. Pre- and post-surveys reported an increase in parents limiting their child's sweetened beverage intake and TV video game time, improved communication about healthy eating and physical activity, and increased healthy shopping habits. Additionally, parents and children enjoyed spending time together, cooking, talking, and learning. There were, however, some limitations. Programs have different attendance policies, therefore collecting pre- and post-evaluations of the same Dreamers is difficult. It's possible that Dreamers will skip entire years of participation in the program, and then they can come back and just start off where they left off years before. Dreamers are generally spread across many different schools in their area, so their health education experiences vary. Building Wellness is facilitated by different instructors, so implementation is different for each group, and this could affect outcomes. And generalizability is questionable since the pilot population is very specific. Our Dreamers have opportunities and access to resources that their peers don't have. So the future of Building Wellness must include a valid evaluation of the effectiveness and feasibility of the Building Wellness program. So our plan is to select a comparison group, create a database to record and analyze the collected data in order to explore any relationship between health literacy, building wellness participation, and health outcomes. We'll continue to roll Building Wellness out across the country to gather more data using the current model and also experimenting with using each curriculum as a standalone program. This year, we're already expanding to 2 sites in Miami and 2 sites here in Denver. And we'll also continue the development and evaluation of Building Wellness Family Style. So while the project has not completed a full 6-year cycle, the results are looking promising. Thus far, Building Wellness is a feasible, inexpensive, fun, engaging youth health literacy program, and Building Wellness may be an effective and valuable model in future programs targeting health literacy in underserved youth. So I can take any questions if you have them. Sure. They're all urban so far. In New York, mainly, and one in LA. Sure.
I just have more of a comment than a question. I've heard you were talking before, and I've heard about this wonderful foundation. And I think overall, that even if kids don't make it to college, it's a wonderful thing to do, and that adding this element of health and wellness just shows a great concern for these children, and probably has benefits that
very true. Yeah.
I have a couple of questions. One sure. is, did the youths take part in developing the survey you use for both your pre- and post-test measures? And also, did you assess their perception of health itself in terms relative to the disease areas that you're looking at? So.
We didn't specifically talk to the kids about creating the pre- and post-evaluation, mainly because we have such a small sample that if we used the kids that we have access to develop the pre- and post, they'd be the same kids taking the pre- and post, which would, I think, skew the results.
No, I was actually thinking in terms of the literacy of it, you know, in terms of the language you used for the survey, that was something that they could have.
We didn't officially use them, but I have contact with them a lot, and so just talking to them, I get feedback. So it hasn't been anything kind of.
And their perception of health. How do they perceive their health?
In general, they perceive their own health as being very good, but they definitely are aware of their family's health, and a lot of them have very serious health issues in their family, and so they definitely understand the risk of poor health and the consequences of poor health. But I think a lot of them, before building wellness, didn't understand how to avoid those health consequences. So I think from this program, they feel very empowered, and they can definitely see how the lessons in building wellness will help them to avoid what they see their families going through right now. So great, thank you.
Just to recap on the session, we had our first speaker talk about, you know, assessing communities' needs for language when it comes to health care needs of immigrants and non-immigrants alike, and also health literacy overall for communities. We also had her talk about, you know, how communities themselves prioritize those needs in terms of which aspects of healthcare services they deem language interpretation is very critical in. And our second speaker talked about how to mobilize the community in terms of emergency situation to disperse or distribute language capacity so that both immigrants and non-immigrants alike, or those who can speak the language or can't speak the language, are able to be helped in emergency situations. And third, we had how actually you can use the internet, you know, you can access things, check the internet in terms of its user-friendliness when it comes to healthcare information. One of the things that I will say about your work is it would be wonderful if you could actually look at those websites or compare those websites in terms of, you know, actual user hits or access. And I know the information is hard to get, but it would be great to also have that information in terms of whether or not people who have been to those sites have been able to either continue to go to the sites because they like it and because they feel the information is user-friendly enough, or because or they stopped and decided the information wasn't helpful to them. So it would be good to have that kind of data as well. Fourth, we had Donna talk about how you can roll out workshops to train both individuals and groups in terms of critically appraising healthcare information, be it on the website or in the newspaper or wherever they are reading the information. I wish we had such service for assessing the news media in terms of how they present politics and information to us, but that's a separate conversation right now. And then lastly, Catherine talked about youths in terms of health literacy. One of the populations we least talk about when it comes to health literacy, and so it's really exciting to see that there's somebody or organization out there that is doing something about that. We've got a few minutes for questions, and if people have additional questions, comments, feedback to the presenters, we can definitely take those now. So, yeah. It's a great question. Peggy, you want to take that?
Yeah, most health departments in the United States and the general public health don't provide those kind of services. Hospitals provide language services. And in the literature, I didn't encounter that, but I think that that's a very important issue. And a lot of hospitals provide video interpreters or telephone interpreters. They can't do as a matter of practicality when there are so many languages that are coming in. I think it's a very, very sensitive topic.
You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. The same thing happens in my own department. I think that's more of a clinical center function. They do less more
Could you speak up? Could you?
Sorry. Yeah, but they use more of a video-based interpreter network. And if possible, our kind of policy around special arrangement requests in terms of providing interpreters is that if the clients specifically want either a female or male interpreter, or they want to know from their cultural background, and try as much as possible to match or part of the interpreter gender as best as possible to match based on personal or cultural.
Do you have anything to add to? No? Okay. Other comments, questions? Sure, please. I'm sorry, can you speak up, please?
Providers that we work with, we actually have, or they have style guides available in terms of how we want information translated into specific languages. So I would suggest that you find, if you're talking about written material, to find a translation company that works in that process in terms of they'll work with you to create a style guide. And then as you're creating your materials, make sure that you pre-test it over and over again with both, you know, your target population with bilingual staff that you have on board, just to make sure that the literacy level, the cultural appropriateness of the materials are matching with what your target population wants. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the translation vendors that are out there, the professional translation vendors that are out there, have these guides and can work with you to create that guide.
Yeah, I mean, this is like Karenny and Burmese, and they don't, because they're a lot of their cultures been erased, they don't
know
the language.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I mean, yeah, that's what I meant. I think what the translation companies actually do is provide you with a template, and then you can add to it or remove from it or tailor it in a way that's actually appropriate to your target population. Mm-hmm.